listeners, welcome back to the Portsmouth Running Podcast. This is episode 81, and I am sat here, not only on voice, but Dave and I seem to have left our video feeds on, so I'm kind of looking at you at the same time, Dave. Welcome. How are you doing, mate?
Hello, how's it going?
I'm good. It's like having a face-to-face for a change.
Yeah, it is. I feel like I'm on some kind of work call or something like that, where I've got to look at you and pretend that I'm interested in whatever the fuck is being spoken about.
But we are. Unlike a work call, this is running related. We're always interested in this stuff. But yeah,
I was on a Teams call earlier, actually. And you know, I'm sure other people have done this, but you know how it goes, where suddenly, you know, you're on a 90-minute call or something, and then an hour in, you find yourself having been on a different website for 15 minutes, and then you start, like, putting your arms in the air and stretching out and stuff. And I did it earlier, thinking, Jesus Christ, I hope I haven't blatantly yawned or anything like that.
do you ever just kind of like forget that you're on calls? Like you just kind of like you start just doing your usual habits. Like you might like get up and lean over and grab your phone or something, or just like, yeah, like you say, browse different websites and then you kind of forget you're on the call.
Yeah, exactly. And the other day someone was like, is there a cup of tea in front of your camera? And I was like, oh, no, it's just the incense that I've been burning. So like sat there.
oh dear. Yeah, at least you don't have those horror stories of like going to the toilet and forgetting that you're on camera and stuff like that, you know.
no one's caught me going for a piss just yet, but give it time.
So listen, dude, I can't believe we're on episode 81, and fortunately for the guests today, we have a real special treat in that it is just you and I talking about running shit.
Well, they've hit the jackpot there, haven't they?
this is the jackpot for you listeners. You literally get to listen to Dave and I talking about running, talking about races, because there have been quite a few recently, man. I've been racing for a change. I've actually been out like doing races. I have a couple of new medals to add to the collection, man. Really? I'm really pleased.
I was reflecting on our chats the other day, and for someone like yourself who is quite, I guess, technical in their job, in their role, you know, that looks into the detail of things, and someone from myself who, I guess, technically has come from a scientific background, being that I work in healthcare and have been from uni and stuff, how our conversations really lack any kind of detail, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They're just kind of general. But this is how we chat when we're on runs anyway. Yeah. In fact, sometimes I find some of our runs we really hit the jackpot on some stuff. We really like start talking about some deep things. But
I think that's it. I do think that we have this common ground where we share an appreciation of some of the broader kind of appreciations of life and the psychological and philosophical kind of side of things, as opposed to how our heart rate is working when we're running a 5-minute mile uphill or something like that. Not that I can do that. I mean, a 10-minute mile downhill.
Dude, but last weekend I was running a 20-minute kilometer going up bloody Snowdon. UTS. Yeah. Oh my God.
So you're the king of back-to-back long races at the moment, or back-to-back stupid races, aren't you? So there was Brighton and then the mighty UTS.
UTS, it was really weird. I just didn't ever expect, like a year ago, that I'd find myself on the start line of UTS, because it's one of those, you know, we have like a running WhatsApp group going, like many running groups do and clubs do, and every year it kind of cycles round, where every 6 months it cycles round to the UTS chat, where a lot of like the mutual friends we have are like proper mountain goats, and I count you in that category as well, by the way, Dave. But like you guys all start talking about UTS and the vert you're going to be doing each weekend, and I never kind of really get involved in that, because I tend to be kind of like running flat all the time. And then I found myself on the start line of UTS, and I'm thinking, what the flipping hell have I done here? It's just like, when I arrived, and you know, you drive down into Wales and you start seeing how lumpy the landscape gets, it's like, it's really like quite breathtaking.
That's not Butser Hill.
No, definitely not.
There is that kind of like feeling overwhelmed, I find, when you go to mountainous areas, because you may have spent 10 weeks running up and down Butser Hill to try and get your 6,000 feet in so that you can go and run up a mountain, and then when you actually go and see the mountains, you think, Jesus Christ, man.
they're high. Yeah, properly steep, and they never seem to end as well. Like going up Snowdon, there was like you can kind of see the summit, but it doesn't get any closer quickly. It takes it's a long time, man. And then eventually you kind of get to the top, and you can see all the people at the top and everyone like lining up to take photos. And even that just kind of like it's some kind of like weird parallax scrolling optical illusion, because it just takes like another half an hour to get a little bit closer. It's mental, but what an awesome weekend. But obviously before that I did the London to Brighton, which I don't think we've discussed.
Have we already discussed that?
No, we haven't. No. I think I was getting ready to go for it because it was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good as well. I always, you know, it's another thing. I always forget how, I think because we've done like a few longer races, like we've done the canal races and obviously you've done the tunnel and
yeah,
you kind of start to then think like, okay, well, yeah, the 50 mile distance is manageable, the 100K distance is manageable. But I got a quick recap and reminder of just how long 62 miles is. It's
a long way, isn't it?
Oh my goodness, it was something else. But go on.
But it would be okay if it was three lots of 20 mile runs that you would normally do at home, but it never is it?
Yeah, because I always play those games. I'm always like, well, how am I going to break this run up? Is it like 20 park runs, or is it like, you know, 2x20 mile runs, or is it 5x10 miles? And no matter how much you break it up, it's never that simple when you're out there. It's just stacked on top of each other, a pile of plates is not easy to carry.
Good way of looking at it.
Yeah. But so it was, I think it was about 10 years ago, I think Jason and I kind of lined up. This was before that even the podcast started. We lined up from London to Brighton. So it felt like so nice to kind of go back and start it, but the other way around. And of course, Jason was meant to be with me and he was out injured.
Nice.
You know, when you plan these races with friends, and you're like, oh, yeah, everything's going to be cool. We'll stay in the hotel together, have a meal together. And then someone doesn't turn up and you're like, oh, no. I mean, obviously, I felt really terrible that he's been out injured again. But it was would have been better together.
Well, let down. So you this I guess this is the uphill year, is it? With London to Brighton being the downhill route.
Yeah, because if you look at it on a map, it's uphill. You're literally climbing a ladder. Yeah. Dude, no, it was good. It was I think it was meant to be a good day out. Like I was predicting, because you know it's kind of like roady and mostly traily. So it's like country roads and trails most of the time until you get into London. But I was expecting it to be like nice and dry underfoot a couple of weeks ago, and because it had been like quite a dry spell. And then all of a sudden overnight, I think the night before or a couple of nights before, it had just poured with rain. So the route wasn't easy. And it was also unmarked. So it was basically navigating it with GPX files, which is lucky because you can obviously use your watch and your phone now to kind of track yourself. But on a route that's so twisty and turny, and there's lots of different pathways all the time. So like the kind of, do you know when you're running along a trail and then you kind of duck under a tree and then you come out into an open area and there's like four different ways you can go. Mm. It's, you know, even people were like looking at their watches, like having to wait for a while for their watch to kind of catch up. And then you're kind of spinning around. And so is the breadcrumb map on people's watches and on my phone. And you're trying to go, well, is it that path or is it that path? Cause they go in two completely different ways. It was really tricky actually. Cause I was on my phone, so I didn't have the maps on my watch, but it's made me realize that I probably do need to start using breadcrumbs on my watch. And I was actually going to ask you, it's like a first topic, do you ever use maps on your watch?
I have done. So have done 2, 3, 4 races following it, and I found two of them were 200 mile races and following the breadcrumb trail on the watch, and I thought it was all right, it was fine, you know. It can be a challenge, you're right, because I think actually I've used it at Lakeland as well, and you do get to a point where you just need the compass within the watch to catch up with where you're at before you get a clear idea of which way to go. So in that sense it can be quite problematic, and then when you do get when it's not caught up, you can be confident to think that you're going the right way, have it, and then 10 meters down the road it's suddenly you get big error sounds, and then you have to go the other way. So it's not perfect.
And that was exactly it. That was us the whole way, pretty much, was having to stop and run back 100 meters or 200 meters or even half a mile at one point and then take another path. So it was like that the whole way. So it was, I wouldn't say it was demoralizing, but it was a little bit like, oh shit, we've got to turn around again. And then like run across a wet field or to try and get to a fence with a gap in it. So yeah, it was pretty tricky, but I need to start using those.
Yeah. Did we use one at Conscious Capital? Or did we just follow people? I've got a feeling we just followed.
I think we did. I think we just followed people down to the canal. And then from the canal, it was obviously quite easy because we've done that before. But
go straight.
yeah. But I have gone wrong at the canal. Do you know on the Grand Union Canal, before you do that major junction left into London, when you've got a half marathon left to go, I went straight over there at Grand Union. I went like another mile ahead and then suddenly realized, you know, because I again used my phone, I took my phone out and thought, oh, let me just quick check on my phone. And yeah, I had to turn back.
Like, yeah, that's definitely the wrong time of a race to make a mistake, isn't it?
yeah. I almost feel like we need some kind of like technology where you get this, like, you can choose like an emoji and it kind of like comes out at you like virtually in front of you as like a little kind of like angel and just flies and you basically just follow it. That's what we need.
Yeah. Maybe Garmin, see what they've got in their technology pockets.
Yeah, just some floating holographic like arrow or something in front of you, which would be really good. There would be a real use case for that, because they've got those Google goggles, don't they, that you can kind of wear. Yeah. Google glasses, and you could just have like a holographic arrow in front of you. That's coming, man. It's going to come. Have you done Brighton to London or that route before?
No, I haven't. No.
Oh, you need to go do it, man. It's good. It's really good.
So yeah, did it go on any famous trails, or was it just like dog walking trails?
It probably did. There was gate. You know when you go through the gates and you see the little stickers on there and stuff. There were a few of those, but I wasn't sure whether that was just like public bridle paths or not. So I don't actually know what route it took. However, I would say we obviously walked to the start at about 4:45 from the hotel, and I was with my friend Simon, who I bumped into, who was doing the race as well. And walking through Brighton was hilarious because there were people still clubbing. There were people coming out of clubs for smokes, and we're like, it just felt so weird. It was just like a complete like mishmash of like just different things, you know, just different kinds of craziness that people get up to, you know, like we're there running at that time in the morning, and people were like looking at us just laughing and saying what we're doing, and somebody shouted like, oh mate, the London Marathon was last weekend. Oh, and like
yeah. Did it make you think, oh, maybe I'll just pop into this club rather than go for a run?
Do you know what made me think? Next time, I'm just going to club all night in my race pack, in my Hokas, and I'll just dance along, because there was a drum and bass club like really thumping out some good tunes under the archways on the beach, and I thought I'll just come out at 4:45 and just do the race.
Bang in. You know what, man? Like now the sun is out. Like I've got this kind of trend each year that when it starts getting sunny, I start listening to more electronic music. So I've had a little bit of drum and bass on, like chilled out drum and bass.
Nice.
Like having the sun out recently, I'll try to get all sorts of decent mixes on.
With your fire pit.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas winter, it's all like heavy metal and stuff. So yeah, I probably would have been tempted if I was in Brighton just to sack off the race and go and have a bit of a dance.
next year. But yeah, you wouldn't believe it, within the first so we started at Brighton Pier, and then there's like some quite steep uphill roads going out of Brighton itself, but it was a bit kind of like along the prom, left on a road, along a bit, right on a road, along a bit, left on the road, and within a mile and the front 20 or 30 runners, we had all gone the wrong way. So we all had to turn around and come back already. We literally were like two streets away from the seafront. So obviously we had to turn back, come back half a mile down a road. And then we were literally back at the pack. So we had to kind of, make up some time, make up some ground. And then eventually got onto the South Downs. But there were some horrific parts on the Downs where Mark and obviously the race director had, you know, we needed to get basically over the Downs. We'd not used a proper pathway to come off. We had just got this like rutted, like churned up mash of grass that was like on the side of a really steep hill. I think I told you about it, and it was all like just sopping wet and like deep mud on there. And it was actually quite it was actually quite hairy. I thought to myself, I've never been scared on the South Downs, but I was treading very carefully on it. Because if you fell one side, that would, you would roll down the South Downs. Like, really? There would be no stopping you. Yeah. So
yeah.
It was interesting. But then after that, it was pretty much just a bog fest for 20 miles.
God.
And then, yeah, and then a bit of a mix of that and road for the next 20 miles. And then it was, yeah, like last half marathon, just making your way left, right, left, right, left, right, down the streets of London all the way to where we saw you.
Yeah, we were watching you because we went up to Twickenham to watch Harlequins versus Northampton.
Yeah.
So it was a difficult day, obviously more difficult for you because you were running. But I was like full on training for the bridge then, and had done 30 miles on Friday morning, and then had day at work, and then Saturday morning it was 3 hours, 20 miles or so.
Rode
by a trip to London. So you had finished running, and then it was like, right, I need to go get the trainer. So I had got a lift down to Havant because all the Peterfield trains had been cancelled because of some sort of fucking engineering work, or I don't know, whatever.
The usual.
And so it's replacement bus services. And so I jumped on the train, had bought a few cans of beer, and then met my friend Dave, and was just like, right, I'm just going to start drinking now. So I had a 20-mile run followed by 4 or 5 cans of beer, because we had more when we got there, before I'd even eaten anything, along with 30 miles the day before. So Dave said, look, by the time I got to Twickenham, it looked like I was going to keel over.
My gosh. That's like something I would do, Dave, not you.
I know. It was really grim. So we just carried on drinking all afternoon, turned up to your race, and I was absolutely slaughtered. And I just thought, this is probably the worst bunch of people to turn up hammered to when they're just finishing a race, you know, like, hey, all right.
Yeah, I felt pretty bad because I could see that you'd had a good day. You'd obviously had a few beers. You were in good spirits, and I felt absolutely broken. Like, I had no energy to spend or anything. I gave you a nice big. I transferred some DNA to you by cuddling you with my sweaty, horrible, muddy, and because it rained for the last bloody 4 or 5 hours of the race, which was horrible.
Yeah, it was grim because we were stood at a bus shelter for ages waiting for a bus that we didn't know where it was going to take us. After about an hour of getting wet, I was just like, oh, fuck, just get an Uber.
Okay.
So we got an Uber to see you guys, and then ended up, took us hours to get home because we got to Clapham Junction and missed our train. So we went to the Rock Bar outside Clapham Junction.
My God.
To go and have a couple of drinks, and then missed our train again because we're in this Rock Bar.
Dave, I can't believe it, dude.
Yeah, so it wasn't good, and then I got back at 5 o'clock in the morning. So
can I just interrupt you and just say that with all that training you'd done a couple of days before, that was probably like just some additional sleep training, sleep deprivation training.
It's on the body to but your food went well, your eating went well, did it?
I've actually noticed, like, strangely, like, I think I've been quite transparent on this podcast with recordings before, if people have heard me, and spoken about the issues I've had eating and how I don't enjoy it and stuff like that. But I think I've kind of weirdly, like, turned some kind of maturity corner with my gut. And it sounds really bizarre, but I can now drink Tailwind for quite some time and eat every half an hour. And I've just got to the point where I was really struggling with it over the last year and a half. And you know, I've been struggling, I think, with the long running for the last kind of year and a half. But I think I'm coming out of it now and turning a corner. And I go by your method, which is, and thank you, Dave, which is eat every half an hour. Just have something to eat. It doesn't matter if you like it or you want to or not. That's just something that you've got to do when you do the runs. Just fucking eat, right? And I've been saying that to myself, like, fucking hell, just eat. And I think I'm just coming to this idea that I can do that now, and I'm okay. I just don't worry about it. Just get it down. You done. It's just a job. It's a job like the running.
Yeah, right? Just it becomes a process thing, I suppose, because you're never going to have a decent meal that you truly enjoy when you're doing it. So just get it in and get it done, really. So
yeah, and when that does happen, when you do see something in an aid station that you really, really want, then just take that as a win. That's fine. Like, it might be a cup of like salty soup or a glass of Coke that someone offers you, or a coffee or something like that. Just enjoy them when they come, and stop worrying about flipping having this gorgeous gourmet buffet all the time, because it's not going to be like that. It's just it's a job, like you say. You just got to get it down. So, but interesting. It's I love talking about like nutrition and whether it's with runners or cyclists and just how they. How they handle their food.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but I seem to have this kind of pre-race ritual where I leave it too late to buy any kind of nutrition or socks or Skrill's nut butter. So for this time, I'll do it in good time before the race. And to me, good time is Sunday before. So put in a order on Sunday for the next day delivery, which I am aware of isn't going to be delivered on Monday. But we'd expect it to be delivered on Tuesday, Wednesday acceptable. But our road is closed at the moment, so all delivery drivers that come look at our road being closed and just don't bother deliver anything. So anything we've ordered over the internet last couple of weeks has not arrived.
Oh shit.
So on Friday morning, tomorrow morning, I'm driving to Wales via Southampton to pick up a load of food from the Yodel head office.
Oh, is that where they sent your parcel back to?
Yeah.
Oh my God, please don't tell me that someone at Yodel is going to take your parcel and try and deliver it again when you go and pick it up.
No, hopefully not.
Because my experience with these delivery companies now, when you miss parcels, is that you get some app, right, that you log into and you can track your parcel, and it is the most bloody frustrating thing, because they've used all this AI, the so-called AI, to develop you an app that helps, and then you can't talk to anybody. Or I always find there's an exception, like, you know, you need to do something exceptional with that parcel, something different, and you can't actually do it, and then you can't find a number to speak to anybody, or so I don't know how you handled that, but I hope it works out.
No, you can't. You're absolutely right. In fact, it's in a lot of apps nowadays. It's all AI generated anyway, isn't it? So,
oh, it's so frustrating. Yeah.
Most of the time, stuff just gets dumped on your doorstep anyway, doesn't it? So they don't truly deliver anything. They just sort of throw it at your house.
Yeah.
So at least then, you know, sort of getting a ballpark kind of like area of near my house would have been enough for me, but anyway.
We left your parcel at the end of your lane.
but what was your finishing time then at London's Brighton? We've sort of digressed a little bit, haven't we?
So when I give my results like this, it means I went over what I originally wanted, but for the 62 miles I was under 13 hours. But officially for the race, I think I ran like 64 and a half or something like that, and it was just over 13 hours, which is a lot more, it's probably about an hour slower than I wanted, but I'll give myself the credit for no trail running, no trail training before, just road speed. So I relied on my road fitness, which was good. It kind of got me through most of it, and it was fine. The running was fine. However, I think just that uneven and wet, boggy, really deep bog running was, it just kind of did something to my legs and ankles and just my joints and stuff like that. And it raises a good point, Dave. Like, one thing I learned from Jason Koop's ultra running book, right? One of the most important things for like doing a long run is he always believes in doing like a lot of speed work beforehand. If you're going to do like any speed work beforehand, get that done as far away from the race as you can. And when you get closer to the race, terrain specific training, that's what you need. Because if you don't do that, like, it's all those little differences over a long time will kill your body. And it's, you know, I know that, and I knew that beforehand, but it was interesting to feel, to feel just how much that affected me in a 62 mile race. And it's true. And if I was to dish out advice now to anybody who's running a long run like that, it would be to make sure you go on the terrain that you're going to be running.
Yeah, specificity, isn't it, they call it,
exactly that. Do weeks, make sure you do weeks and weeks of that closer to the race that you get, like maybe the last five, six weeks.
But that's always been the thing that I've, you know, struggled with, going over to places like UTMB or TDS or Transvolcania, that kind of thing, you know, like the mountain races. And it's one of the things that puts me off a little bit of UTS is that although I want to do it, I'm never really going to be that good at it. So it's just going to end up being a massive slog. No, because I've tried running, and we've all tried actually running down a mountain, and it's so bloody hard, you know, because you can't get the rocks in, you know, you can't, Butts Hill isn't rocky, you can't get the specific training in of like the, that kind of ballerina type footwork that you have running over the rocks. So
yeah, can you say that word, Dave? Specificity. anyone listening, whether you're in your car or at home or doing your cleaning or whatever, just try and say that word now out loud, see if you can do it in one shot. Specificity. It's one of those words that we just always struggle with.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But the same, like equally, the point I made about the specificity is I felt the same thing at UTS last weekend, where, you know, the only hill training I'd done was probably London to Brighton. Apart from that, there's been nothing. So because I entered the 25-kilometer race, which is still a long way, you know, don't get me wrong, I don't want to say like that's a short race, but in terms of like what was offered for the races at UTS, that was the shortest race you could do. And my thinking was that with my speed, fitness, and my road running, I could blag the 25k going up the hill. And yeah, I could. It was actually really good. Like Tash and I, because obviously Natasha came with us, we ran a lot of butter going up, apart from just a couple of small places where the obviously gradient got quite steep, and then at the top there was probably like a mile that we had to walk because it was just too steep, and that was god awful. I mean, my feet really struggled with that. All the muscles on the top and side and back of my feet and calves really struggled. Yeah. But the running was good, man. Like I ran pretty much really quick, quite quick down Snowdon. Waited for Tash at the bottom. At the aid station, and then we ran the last bit down, obviously after the second climb, we ran the last bit down into town, finished running. But boy, did I feel it. Well, I've been feeling it this week, like severely feeling, because I thought you could blag it with that fitness, but I knew that it would come out in what I'd feel afterwards, like battered. And yeah, we've both been absolutely battered.
Yeah, there's that. The muscles that you use going downhill just aren't conditioned for it, are they?
No.
So probably if there was if the race was much longer, you probably would have really felt dead quads then.
Yeah. I think if it had been the fifth, I probably could have got maybe squeezed out the 50k maybe, but my legs were really feeling like jelly going down that last bit. And it's funny when you come back down, because we went up the miners path up Snowdon, which is like it's quite runnable, steep, but it's quite runnable. And then coming down, as you get into Lamberis, you've done most of the descent, you go into this road portion, this like paved portion, and it goes really, really steep for quite a while. Mm. And members of the public had all turned around and were walking backwards, which is really weird. I've got like a video of it, of this guy just walking backwards. We passed a whole bunch of teens and they were even like walking backwards.
Yeah.
But the quads then were absolutely like jellyfied. Every single step was like the whole weight of your body just going forward and down onto them.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like hats off to anyone who did 50, the 100K, and obviously some friends of ours we know who did the 100 miler, which is just unbelievable. I can't believe being out there for that long.
Yeah. Like, what's it, 48 hour limit, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, what Alex and... There was local runner Simon as well. I think they both did really well. Then they got like a top 50 or top 60 finish, both of them.
Yeah, that's good. So going. Yeah.
Are you going to go next year?
I don't know. No, I hope stopped running next year. So.
What? Sorry, what's this?
Hopefully, I'll have stopped running next year.
Well, you're going to take up something else. Are you going to take up cycling?
Yeah, I might become a cyclist or as it name. Kebabs, start smoking, eating kebabs, and sit on the sofa.
In all seriousness, Dave, you could never stop running, could you?
I don't know about that. Way it is at the moment, I feel like I probably should.
Are we allowed to mention what you've got coming up this weekend without putting any pressure on you?
No, there's no pressure. I have no pressure on myself anymore. It either works out or it doesn't, and like, you know, so yeah, I'm going over to do the bridge, which is 200 miles long, over a 2-mile bridge.
Amazing. I mean, I would say that's crazy, but obviously you've done the tunnel, so it's fairly tame in a way, but it's still massive.
I fear this one a little bit more than the tunnel. Like, I was excited about the tunnel because it's just so, it's got like a real USP to it, and it's so bizarre and obscene that, you know, it piqued my interest as soon as I heard about it. Whereas this one, it just feels not quite as exciting, and that worries me a little bit.
Okay. Have you been keeping track of the weather at all?
No.
Okay, well, just don't. Well, I haven't looked, so I'm not giving on to anything, but yeah, I wouldn't probably just not look, because it's quite exposed, isn't it? Unlike the tunnel, where you're all kind of like wrapped in nicely in a nice bundle.
Exactly. The tunnel is just totally chill. It's like the meditation of running, isn't it? Like, and yeah. This one's going to be by a road in a windy situation over some water, and it's 2 miles out, 2 miles back. So it's longer. God. So you've got to, you know, for me, you endure there's fewer, what's the right word for it? There's fewer rewards. So in the tunnel, there's a reward every mile.
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, it's a reward every 2 miles. And so it might be 20, 25, 30 minutes before you get to the turnaround point. So,
yeah, that might give you the incentive to keep going more, you know, like you know, you would have doubled what you effectively have to run before you get to your box. So,
Yeah.
Oh, dude, unbelievable. But it's going to be quite strange. I mean, cars kind of drive past you. And if there's a traffic jam, people are going to be thinking, what the hell are these people doing? Like, hold on a second. They've turned around and they're going backwards.
I wouldn't have thought people will notice that much, because I think there's about 9 of us doing it.
Oh, is it so really?
Not a lot. Yeah, it's not very popular. So there's a 100-mile race that starts at lunchtime on Saturday as well, which is quite good, because that'll bring new people. So if I can get to lunchtime on Saturday, that'll bring like a second wind.
Okay.
And then the focus will be getting to that 100-mile point. And if you have a good 100 miles, then potentially start to believe if you feel good at 100. So
yeah.
But given Barter, I was quite fit at, and that was a personal shittest. I'm quite fit now, so who knows how it could go.
yeah. But you know what? I'm actually learning now not to pay too much attention to those things, because the more of these things you do, and the more attempts you make where you kind of fail at races that you think you're going to finish because you're fit and you don't, you then like start looking back and going, actually, do you know what? It doesn't really even matter when you're fit sometimes, because you can go into a race unfit and have a great race.
Well, good old Jamie, he said that he's run about 200 miles this year, and he went and did the Thames Park 100 over the last couple of weeks, hadn't he?
Exactly.
And if, hours. So.
Yeah, brilliant. So yeah, it's not always like that. So I think you're going into it perfect, Dave. I think you're just getting into it chill.
Hopefully.
Yeah. And don't come back with anything else but the win, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. Going for the win, as always.
Dave, brilliant, man. Awesome. I love chatting with you. And I love discussing these crazy events of yours, because I won't admit this again, but you kind of inspire me to do some of these crazy things. And I'm going back to the tunnel next year.
Yeah, so you are.
Yeah. I have my place. It's paid for. It's done. So.
I'd reflect on your own stupidities by taking any inspiration from me. So
that's fine. Yeah, and I know you're a very modest man, Dave, but you do inspire me. You're an absolute running maniac, which I love.
So I think the term is fully trained bell end.
There you go, fully trained bell end. Well, nice way to summarise it. Yeah, so for me, I don't know what I'm doing next. I was in two minds about, well, I was in five minds about doing Liverpool to Leeds, but now I'm in two minds about doing the Autumn 100, so that I can get a Western States qualifying race to enter Western States next year. So, yep. Could be the Autumn 100, Dave.
Do it, or do both.
yeah, maybe do both. We'll see. Dude, it's been a pleasure. Yeah, it is. It's a long way off, but yeah, I'll hopefully do one of those. So that's me next. But it's been lovely to chat, and apologies to the listeners for not having a guest who's got something interesting and insightful to share with you running wise. But hopefully, it's been enjoyable on your run or your car journey or whatever, wherever you've been listening. And yeah, one thing I will say to guests is I think the pathway behind the castle is opening at some point in the future. So it's a bit of local news there. Look out for that. I think it's happening at some point over the next kind of couple of months. So a new place to run, Dave, when you come down for a coffee.
Amazing. Yeah, awesome. Ah, talking about coffee.
Yep.
I was in Southsea's greatest coffee shop earlier, Hunter Gatherer, enjoying they now do kimchi and vegan cheese, and it tastes pretty good for vegan cheese as well. Vegan cheese sourdough sarnies, and they're awesome.
Okay.
So that was nice, and chatted to my friend Jason, but it made me realise how many awesome coffee shops are around nowadays. I do think Hunter Gatherer does the best ones around, but that Bay Coffee that's opened up near the seafront as well is well worth it if you're going past having needs a caffeine fix.
So, it's good, isn't it? It's really nice in there. The guy makes a really good, he spends a lot of time making the coffee and putting it in the cup. There's a lot of love in each cup.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, really, we need to go on another coffee shop tour, don't we? Because and try the steam room as well. So
we need to reignite the YouTube channel and get some videos going, because I think we need to show these beautiful faces of ours on camera more.
Indeed.
Dave, one quick question for you. Have you ever considered a backyard ultra?
I have, yeah. I've considered it.
Do you want to try one next year?
Yeah, I'm up for that.
Okay.
Give it a go.
Because Blended have got their backyard ultra in June.
Mm.
So for listeners, if you haven't go and check out Blended Trails, I promised them that I'd give them a quick shout out, because I think they're almost full or are full for their race mid-June. But I was kind of considering that one as well, but it just hasn't worked out with timing this year and the ability to get up there. But I would love maybe next year to go over and give that one a bash.
Yeah.
So pencil it in, Dave.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Awesome, dude. Look after yourself. Love to the family. And I'll be sending you lots of love. Are you going to check your phone while you're running or not?
Maybe.
And can we track you?
Yeah, so it's on Timing Monkey again, and there'll be an opportunity to put comments on that again as well.
Okay, here's a challenge. Every listener, we need to send Dave a comment on time, because I think you can put comments on Timing Monkey as well.
Yeah.
So every listener that's listened needs to go onto Timing Monkey, search for the Bridge 200, and leave Dave a message that you can read when he comes past the timing machine every 2 miles. There we go. Challenge up, Dave. Awesome, mate. Lots of love, and speak to you soon.
Take it easy.
Take care, listeners. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.